This meeting will come to order, please. We'll withhold adopting our minutes until we have a quorum, although I understand I really don't need a quorum to do that, but I like to have members look over the minutes, so I want to wait. We're continuing our presentation this morning from Tuesday, when we had an excellent presentation on career and technical. But today we have someone from the field. Michael Miron, who teaches in Forest Lake, is here. Jerry Schoenfeld is also here. And I think Mr. Schoenfeld's going to address some issues first in dealing with career and technical, and then we'll hear from Mr. Miron as to how he handles this. And members, what I want you to be thinking about is how can we achieve some reform in the area of taking career and technical and allowing those students to earn credit for some of the coursework they do in areas such as math and science that would allow them to satisfy the requirements for the state of Minnesota. Mr. Schoenfeld and Mr. Miron, welcome to the committee. Mr. Schoenfeld, would you begin, say your name for the record, and let's hear what you have to tell us.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, which is a group of about, I guess we have about 330 ag educators in the state that range from high school level with about 180 programs, I believe, approximately across the state. And a little less than 270 teachers, I believe, that work in those programs, plus adult farm management in the Minscu system, and then also at the University of Minnesota in some of those. So that's kind of the range of the group that I work with. The significance of having all three of those groups kind of working together is the fact that we've been able to integrate things between high school and college. And part of that has been something that started in this this committee, or at least its similar committee, a few years ago, when I came to this committee and asked for some graduation requirements to be changed in Chapter 120B relative to agri-science. We've never had a follow-up to show you what we've done with that, and so that is what we're doing today. And I remember Representative Dabney when we were discussing this, and we did both in agri-science and in ag-economics, and I want to give you a little bit of an update, and then you'll see the practical demonstration of what we were able to do with this, and I think, at least I'm impressed, so I hope you will be as well.
Mr. Schoenfeld, I'm going to interrupt just for a second to officially call the meeting to order and to ask Representative Greiling, would you move approval of the minutes or adoption of the minutes March 1? That was our 17th meeting. Today is our 18th meeting. Representative Greiling moves adoption of the minutes from March 1st. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, we also have the minutes from our evening meeting of February 28. Representative Myra, have you looked those over? They're very brief.
I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Myra moves adoption of the minutes from February 28th. Are there any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Those minutes are, the motion prevails and those minutes are adopted. Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Now we're official and please continue.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, first of all, relative to the science, I did ask your legislative assistant to put out the graduation requirements, so I assume you all have that. And you might know that down on the lower portion of it where it talks about under 6B, it says an agri-science course may fulfill a science credit requirement in addition to the specified science credits in biology and chemistry or physics under paragraph A, clause 3. And then that was put in 2006, and then the other career and tech people came back here a couple years later and added in the next C, which was a career and technical education course may fulfill the science, mathematics, and arts credit requirement under this section. So I can not speak today for all career and tech, although I do know that other career and tech areas have embedded science standards and other kinds of standards into their coursework. But I can tell you that in relative to agriculture, that we always have, are, and will have basic science, research and science, and applied science as a very major portion of our curriculum. It has always been the case. And so as part of that, one of the things that we did a few years ago was we went out and sought some private funding outside of the state for once. But we also did get some funding through MEALC, which is state dollars, Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council. And we put together about $300,000 initially that went towards working with a group called MyCart to take all of the standards and benchmarks that you require under the statute and that the department has helped put together for science. And then we transferred those so that we could easily link them up with our curriculum and our coursework within agriculture and make that linkage. And I hope what you'll see today is that we start with what is basic science, the kind of science that most of us would have had in a biology class or a chemistry class or that kind of thing. And then we relate it to an applied science situation. And I chose the thing because I tried to remember something I remembered out of college in my biology courses, and that was meiosis and mitosis. And so you probably remember the same. And so he's starting with that because it is part of the agricultural science curriculum. And then in addition to that, we'll show you how that transfers from kind of that theoretical or pure science to more applied science in terms of the agricultural program. In addition to that, though, I want to point out that this curriculum that drives our programs. In addition to that, we've worked with a number of different areas. As I mentioned, we've worked with private industry in some cases that have actually helped pay for some of this. In this case, Christensen Farms. They were so interested. Some of you probably don't know what Christensen Farms are, but they're a fairly large in Minnesota, and your linkage here in the state legislature is that Rod Hamilton works for them. And so that's where he's employed. And but they're very interested in animal science. And so we developed, for instance, college in the schools for animal science and plant science for our agricultural education teachers. And we also, so that we worked with the University of Minnesota so they can get college credit, as you know, in high school in those areas. And along with that, had to have a rigorous curriculum in order to do it. And we went into the science area. In addition to that, I know Representative Dabney and I had quite a discussion a few years ago about economics. And in terms of agricultural economics, we worked with the Minnesota Council of Economic Educators at the University of Minnesota in the department there that is agricultural economics and applied economics. And they worked with us, and I think we've had more agricultural educators go through that program than any other group. To learn how to integrate standards, benchmarks, and all the curriculum to fulfill what Minnesota requires in that area. And so we have about 25% of, I believe it's about 25% of our agricultural educators that are now certified and all that kind of thing to work in that area and have gone through the coursework and the curriculum. And we are presently working on doing with ag economics the same thing we've done with what you'll see here in the science curriculum. To put it in a very easy form for instructors to be able to match up the standards, the benchmarks, and so forth. To my knowledge, although these are embedded in their local decisions, I don't think any other group that I'm aware of, at least, and I'll stand corrected if anybody says it different, but to my knowledge, I don't think any other group other than the ag educators have actually put it into this kind of a system so that you can readily, as an instructor, go on the internet and pull it up. And I can tell you that with the MyCart system that we've helped develop here, and it's been worked in conjunction with the Department of Education, this system is available to every ag teacher in the state and made basically free for them to be able to get into this through our collections of funds through different sources. So with that, Madam Chair, I think I will stop. I did want to mention one other thing that, as I said earlier, this is not the only way that we work in that area. We've also worked, for instance, with the Mayo Health System out of Rochester. And we've used we've taken training in biotechnology where they've worked to show us how to work with a DNA and other genomics to integrate biotechnology into our agricultural science courses. And Mr. Mirren could just very briefly, perhaps before he starts, because I know we have a little extra time today, I think, tell you a little bit about that, because he's also taken that program. So I'd like him to just tell you a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the MyCart demonstration.
Thank you, Mr. Miron, and thank you for giving up a bit of your teaching day to do this again. And why don't you lead off by giving us your name for the record and then telling us a little bit about that experience with Mayo Health System.
Certainly. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Miron. I teach agriculture education at Forest Lake High School in Forest Lake, Minnesota. It's a pleasure to be with you today, and happy to rearrange the schedules because what I teach, agriculture education and career and technical education, is something that I'm extremely passionate about, not only in terms of that it's my profession, but it's a vocation for me, and it's something that my students were here the other day. I know, Madam Chair, you were gracious enough to let them introduce themselves, and they really have an expectation from me that I'm able to provide them with a certain level of education experiences so that they can be successful in whatever's next for them after high school. And so that's an obligation that I take seriously and my colleagues take seriously as well. And as Mr. Schoenfeld mentioned, the changes, I have been one of those teachers that also teaches agricultural economics. We went through the economic systems course at the University of Minnesota. And that group, the Minnesota Council on Economic Education, has been providing workshops now specifically for agriculture teachers. And we've been working together as a group to develop the outlines and the lesson plans in cooperation with them. And so I'm a part of that team that's been working with Dr. Claudia Parliament at the University of Minnesota so that we ensure that as we put our agricultural flavor on the content, that we're meeting the needs and the standards and the expectations that were set forth when the legislature approved those standards and made those standards part of every student's obligation to meet graduation requirements. In terms of the Mayo Clinic experience, that was phenomenal as well. We were able to go down for a week in Rochester and work with scientists, researchers, practitioners at Mayo Clinic, and they adapted laboratory exercises for us that we could use in our classroom that were specific to agriculture education. A couple brief examples might be taking milk from a cow and from a goat and extracting the DNA from that milk, being able to run that through a PCR machine, extract the DNA, and do electrophoresis to look at the DNA markers. So if a student was wondering what animal, they have controls, and so they can match those DNA markers with the specific animal that they came from and make a determination on their own as to whether this is goat milk or milk from a traditional cow, as well as cheese. And why that's important is because the food inspectors, in order for food products to be certified as coming from a dairy goat, they need to meet certain qualifications in terms of the amount of dairy milk or goat milk that is in those products. And so it's something that's being done at the food science laboratories here as they inspect facilities and make sure that products are meeting quality standards. Another example is we can take corn or grain and take food products and extract the DNA and actually determine whether or not there was genetically modified corn used in the processing of a Frito potato chip or whether or not it was from a non-GMO plant. And of course, we know the significance of that as people are concerned about their food supply and where their food comes from. So those are just a couple of brief examples that we've used at Mayo Clinic or labs from Mayo Clinic, as well as sources from the agricultural economics workshops, and integrated them into our curriculum at Forest Lake. But my real reason for being here today is really more of a demonstration. I don't have handouts for you or a lot of things to follow. What I have is our website. What I have is our resource. And when Dr. Stone was in on Tuesday, he provided a significant amount of data and statistics and talked about the importance of contextual learning and integrated learning. And my role here today is to try to show you, demonstrate a little bit on how we've been able to do that in agriculture education in terms, in this example, in terms of the sciences. And so in Forest Lake, we do have courses that meet graduation requirements, elective graduation requirements in the area of science. That said, with the changes in the legislation, the requirements in chemistry or physics, there isn't any elective science to be had in Forest Lake area schools anymore. So that opportunity for students is gradually being phased out, beginning with this year's current eighth graders. And so that's the that's we still meet science elective requirements, but there aren't any science electives to be had anymore, at least in our school system. And so that's kind of the significance of where this is going. But as Jerry said, we're always going to be teaching some applied sciences and integrating sciences. And through the CART system, we can choose and we can select courses and lessons based on the topics that we're teaching. And you can see our basics in environmental resources, animal, plant, and soil sciences, biological sciences, natural resource sciences. But the mode that I'm going to take you through this morning is actually to look and to select lessons based on the standards. And what CART has done is they have taken lessons, materials, curriculum that we can teach in agriculture education and taken a broader look at the Minnesota State Academic Standards and linked our lessons, crosswalked those lessons with the specific standards that every student needs to meet to graduate from high school here in the state of Minnesota. And so if I select the Minnesota Academic Standards link, there they are listed in the terms of nature, science, and engineering, physical science, earth and space science, life science, physical sciences. And if I actually want to take a look back, I can actually select first based on language, arts, mathematics, science, or social studies. And so those are the broad areas that we can choose from. And when I get into sciences and I select that as my path, it gives me the strands in the area of science, the four strands from the history and nature of science down to life science that students are expected to meet. And so for today, I'll select life science so we don't overwhelm. We'll get plenty of things to choose from here when I just choose on life sciences and areas, because now I'm going to look at those substrands, cells, diversity of organisms, interdependence of life, heredity, biological populations, flow of matter and energy, and the human organism. So we've now taken our strand, we've broken into substrands, and we can even break that down further into the individual benchmarks that each student is required to meet. And so for this particular demonstration, I'll just select cells, and I will select all of those benchmarks. Everything from cellular structures and their functions, to cell membranes and osmosis, to the cell cycle, and as Mr. Schoenfeld was mentioning, cell division. And that's what we'll use for our example as we go through. So when I submit that as my area, a number of different lessons are provided for me. And they are not only there, but they're also telling me what standards are being met. And I'm sure that that's maybe small to read from the back, Madam Chair. But if I select the standard, the academic standard, it lets me know which specific strand, substrand, and benchmarks are being met as a part of this lesson. If I were to classify living things, there are four specific benchmarks that are being met through the course of that lesson. Mr. Schoenfeld mentioned cell division, and so we'll go down to cell division. And he also mentioned an applied science. And so as we look at the different, here it is, as we look at cell division, I can pull up that lesson plan.
Please do that.
And it'll, like Mr. Schoenfeld said, this is available to all agriculture education teachers. So there was some talk the other day about how we can't operate on an island, and I think that's true. And this is not only a process by which I can open things up and I can use them, but there's also pieces built into the CART system so I can collaborate with my colleagues regardless of where they are. When I develop labs or when I develop opportunities, I can post them and I can share them, and other teachers throughout the state can also have access to those resources that I've developed on my own that help complement and bring some application to some of these lessons. So here's the one on cellular division. Has it?
Bunch of slow down.
You bet. So cellular division. Yeah, I work with this every day, so I suppose I go through some rapid pace as I'm trying to put together lessons for students every day. But here's the learning objectives in this particular lesson. And we talked about mitosis and cell division and the role that that meets. Resources are also available. That provides me with some extra things that I can use in my classroom. The list of the equipment, the tools, supplies that are needed are provided in the lesson plan, along with some terms. that students will be expected to know and understand by the time, and hopefully apply even, by the time that the lesson is complete. And the lesson is very specific.
Representative Greiling, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Muren, just for fun, why don't you pretend we don't remember what mitosis is?
Sure.
Tell us.
Certainly.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. I was thinking the same thing.
So if I were teaching this lesson, the interest approach is available there for me. So as a class, I would ask you to, if you've ever had a cut or an injury that's healed, has that ever happened to you? How did your body create the new cells to heal that injury? How did that happen? Where did your genetics come from? Why is your hair blonde or your eyes brown? Where does that come from? And I would also relate it to animals, being that it's animal science. That's the context that some of my students are looking for. What makes a chocolate lab different from another color variation, or what makes our German Shepherd different from a Labrador Retriever? And so we would go through some of those things, and we would talk a little bit about, to try to bring in the students' own background and their own knowledge and their own interests, and use that as the platform, as the foundation from which we can build the rest of the lesson upon, so we can come back to those examples and help make the learning a little bit more relevant for them, and hopefully even so relevant that they can think about and apply to how this impacts something that they're doing in their daily life at home. My students in Forest Lake, I don't have a lot of farm students anymore in suburban Forest Lake. We still see about 700 students in our agriculture classes every year. And so this really is far from talking about maybe what we view as traditional agriculture, cows and swine and poultry and those types of things, and really getting it into some other animal context or plant context that they might be able to identify with. And so we would start, once we get their interest approach, we would talk about what is mitosis, how does it work. And what I should also probably bring up at this point that would help is these lessons all come prepared with PowerPoint files as well that I can use in my classroom. And they provide lots of content information, and usually once I perform that interest approach, I have a better idea of what the current level of understanding of my students is, and I can modify the learning to best meet their needs. But those pieces are all included. That interest approach that I just went through is all included on these lessons. The objectives, so that they have a idea of where the lesson is going and what the outcome should be by the time they're completed, are included as well. The terms that I mentioned are provided. And then it guides students through what is a cell, how does it work, why is it important, how do they divide, how do they grow, how do they multiply, what is mitosis, and how does that process work. And so really what we're trying to get down to in this particular lesson is explain to students how one cell becomes two, and how two becomes four, and how that process continues to replicate itself over the course of a life of an organism. And so there's, as we get through, they'll talk about the different phases, and they'll provide pictures that I think I remember from my biology book. I don't think that the pictures and the animation here has changed much as they go through the different phases of mitosis, everything from metaphase to anaphase and everything in between. And so that's kind of how the lesson is pieced together. I don't know if that answers your question, Representative Greiling, or if that helps give you a more visual picture of what the lesson would look like to my students. And this provides me with some basic content, at least a place to build from. The other thing that's included in these MyCart lessons is what they call e-units. And they're called e-units because they're really designed to be posted online. So a student can go home and they don't need a textbook. They can go home and they can have access to these readings. They can print them off if they'd like, but they wouldn't have to. And they can have some supplementary information, some complementary information that helps support the learning that happened in the day. And so I can pull these e-units and I can assign them to the class. I can put discussion questions online that they can respond to. Certainly we have students who may not have that type of access, and this also allows me the flexibility to print off those things so those students can participate and be a part of that discussion as well. But what I think really why I'm passionate about what I teach and why I'm interested in agriculture education is because in the course of my context, I can work to make things kind of come alive for students. I can provide them with things that they can see and they can feel and they can touch and they can experience. And so Mr. Schoenfeld mentioned our college and the school's animal science course. I'm an improved instructor for that in course. And as part of that, we do some embryology. And usually we use chickens or ducks or pheasants or something like that as our example. And I have an incubator in the classroom, and we can go through and we can conduct chick embryology labs and lessons. So we can incubate the eggs. We can watch, we can do a process called candling, where we can actually shine a light through the egg, and we can see that chick, that fetus, that embryo developing inside of the pheasant or the chicken or the duck egg. And that provides me with another context by which to teach cell division. We can explain what's happening. We can explain what's going on inside of that egg. And not only do we explain it, but they can see it. And then, of course, at the end, there's an outcome. And, you know, we have these chicks that spend a few days in the agriculture department. We can talk about growth. We can talk about development. We can bring that into a whole other set of lessons before we send them home to a farm, or sometimes pheasants go to the Department of Natural Resources where they can be released in a park or something like that. And so those lessons also tie in with chick embryology, and I have materials just like I had in cell division that help relate that learning to the students. We can talk about the parts of the egg, that's what these terms are, and bring in the mitosis piece and the cell division piece from before. So that's just a glimpse as to how we bring those things together, but the other piece that I find very powerful about this MyCart system is at the end of these lessons, you know, I can talk about how great they are and make them sound as engaging as they are, but at the end of the day, at the end of the lesson, at the end of the unit, I really want to make sure that my students understand what was taught. I want to make sure that the standards that were taught are understood, that they were learned, and that the students can apply those pieces into future learning. And so we can create quizzes that are tied to the standards based on the lessons that were taught in the lessons. And so if I go into the quiz section, or another way to look at it, if I look at the cell division section, if I go back to that lesson, I can view the aligned questions. And I can post these questions. I can either give them in a paper pencil way, or I can give them in an online version. I have lots of different ways that I can assess. But these questions are then linked to the standards where these lessons came from in the beginning. And so each of these questions, based on how well the student performs, I know how well they really comprehended, learned, and continue to understand the standards that were taught in the lesson, either in cell division or embryology or any course of science that I might teach as I go through the MyCart system.
So, Mr. Miron, do you assign much homework? I mean, do you encourage this? And do they check their understanding then basically online and it gets communicated to you? Would you speak about that, please?
Certainly, Madam Chair. The traditional, I give some of these quizzes and maybe more of a formal, sometimes an informal type of way, I think, in addition to making sure that students understand something and putting a point value on it and putting that in the grade book for final grading. It's also important as we go through the lesson to know and gauge whether students are really picking this up as we go. And so I try to incorporate those questions not only as a summative assessment, a formal assessment at the end, but also in terms of benchmarks and understanding as we go through the particular lesson. Sometimes I do that more online when I'm trying to simply gauge, and that can be used as homework as well. The other type of homework that we do in agriculture education is something we call a supervised agricultural experience, which asks students not only to do something in terms of reading and answering questions at home, but to develop something that relates to what was going on so that we have some applied learning and some individualized learning. So not only can students restate this on a test or a quiz, but they can also apply it to some type of everyday living.
Mr. Mirren, are you on a block schedule at Forest Lake?
We are on a modified block schedule. We have a unique schedule. When I started teaching there 7 years ago, we were on a four-period day that was on a quarter system. We now have a five-period day. The first three classes of our day are semester-based, and they're 50 minutes long, and the last two classes of the day are 90 minutes long, and they are quarter-based. So depending upon how classes fit into the schedule, a student might have their math in a semester basis and maybe have my animal science course on a quarter basis. That does provide some flexibility for some laboratories and things like that, but we also have to have flexibility in the schedule to be able to teach a course regardless of when it might be offered.
So, Mr. Mirren, are you able to accomplish most of, well, obviously you teach to the benchmarks, but are you able to accomplish most of what you have in your lesson plans within that time constraint?
Yes, Madam Chair. An example that I would show you, if I can find it quickly, when we were going through the process to have our courses approved for elective science, we were asked to align and design our courses, a holistic course, with the idea that the standards, what to be able to explain to the school board and the administration what standards could be met. And in doing so, we created course outlines. And so some of these are examples I've run for different things, but I created a course on natural resources. And I would go in, I went in the other way.
You want to show that to us?
Sure, I certainly can. I'll let this finish generating its report. I went in and I selected lessons based on the library. So I would go in and I would select my natural resource sciences, and I would submit that, and I would select the problem areas mm-hmm. that I felt that I wanted to meet in that particular course. Now, in Forest Lake, I have a whole separate course on wildlife management.
Okay.
That's a course in of its own, and so I didn't touch those. But let's just say I selected all the problem areas in natural resources, and I submitted that to the system. It would pull up all the aligned lessons that it views and it has tagged as being potential natural resource science courses. And so everything from exploring natural resources, ecology and ecosystems, human demands on natural resources, conservation of natural resources, careers, soils, land use, and you can see the list is fairly lengthy. I can then save that course. To an existing outline, and I'll just use this one as an example so I can, well, maybe it won't let me do that. Oh, it wants me to select all the lessons. Now it knows what to use. And once I select all those lessons, I can then export a course outline. And I'll export this course outline into a Word format document. And this is what I use in the syllabus that I give each of my students. And it's also what I use to show my administration and my school board what lessons were going to be taught in the area of natural resource sciences. Now, it's dealing with lots of lessons here. It's dealing with probably close to 60 to 70 lessons, and so it's going to take a little while for it to process all that data. But what's unique about this is once it's done processing the data, is it's going to be able to I don't know why it didn't provide them over there. It usually does, and in my example, it did. It tells me not only the lesson and the number of the lesson, but it also tells me which academic standards are being taught through those lessons.
Correct.
I'm
mm-hmm.
not sure why that didn't process that the way that I wanted it to, because over here it's not showing.
Well, that's okay,
some of those
Mr.
standards.
Baron.
But
we get
I think,
the idea, yes.
Right. So it will integrate those things, and so then when I deliver that, it provides them with an idea of what standards, benchmarks are being met through the course of those lessons
Correct.
Being taught.
Thank you. Representative Norton has a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier you mentioned with the addition of physics and chemistry that electives were going by the wayside, and so I wondered if you could expound on that, and I didn't understand correctly.
Mr. Miran.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I wouldn't say our electives are not going by the wayside, but what isn't possible for students anymore is for them to meet portions of their science requirement in an agri-science course. And the reason for that is with the addition of chemistry and physics and Forest Lake, we have three required secondary credits in the area of science that's mandated by the state, and they meet that in terms of a physical science, a biological science, and a full year of chemistry. And so all three of those science credits are being met in courses that are required: physical science, biology, and chemistry.
If I might just
yes,
add
Mr.
to that.
Schoenfeld.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at what we had done a few years ago, I guess the point of this from our standpoint is that the legislature at that time said yes, go to it, try to develop an agri-science situation where you can meet all of these requirements. We did so, and now because of additional requirements that are loaded on every year, all of a sudden we can't do it. And it was, and Mike just explained why. But I would contend, and I'm biased as all get out, but I will contend that we can produce as good as, and perhaps a better education in a lot of these science standards than you would normally be able to. I don't mean to be less in terms of the science teachers, that's not what I mean. I'm just simply saying that different students are able to learn in different ways, and for some of them, contextual learning is what will make it come alive to them, rather than the pure science that they might find in a pure science course.
Representative Norton.
We're kind of being robbed from that.
So. Yeah, thank you. And that's kind of what I was getting at. Is it not possible, given all that you've been able to create with these very creative courses that are going to be meaningful to students because they'll be touching on subjects they're interested in rather than just taking biology or just taking chemistry, is there a way to make an ag chemistry course that would meet the requirements of chemistry for the state, but could
only if you change the law.
Okay, so that's part of what's coming up. The other question, Madam Chair,
yes,
if I could just
Representative
Norton. I'm wondering if Forest Lake, we have down in Rochester through Mayo and the program that you're talking about, we have two mobile science labs that travel around. We added a second one this year, and part of what grant that we wrote to do that had ag education in it, and I've heard that it's going further away from southern Minnesota than we thought, and I wondered if you were using the ag
Mr. Miran.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I have not used that trailer yet. I have talked to my colleagues who says it's a very powerful tool, has very sophisticated equipment that students in a public school setting most likely would not have access to. For me, the limiting factor there is traveling to Rochester, bringing it to Forest Lake, and bringing it back to Rochester. Also, I think some of the funding of that is through a local cooperative that's down there, and we want to make sure that those that are paying for the resource get the first opportunity to use the resource as well.
And Madam Chair, one last question.
Yes, Representative Norton.
Continue, because we're talking about continuing adding more ag courses to that lab, if, as we're seeing that the science and with the challenge of putting chemistry and physics, is it going to be needed any longer? Are you going to still be able to use the science lab if nothing changes?
Mr. Miran.
Madam Chair, I think that anything we can do to enhance student learning in the area of sciences or mathematics or arts or any of the content areas is what's in the best interest of students. I intend to continue to engage my students in science education and science learning along with the other concepts that I teach. I certainly can reach a broader number of those students if students have more flexibility in terms of choice. But these are things that I feel, and I think my colleagues believe, are in the best interest of students and preparing our students for the future workforce. Thank you.
Mr. Miron, what discussions do you have with your colleagues about the testing and how what you're addressing in your courses would prepare our students for the testing that we have in reading, math, etc.?
Madam Chair, I don't have access to it because I'm not the site administrator, but our state supervisor that works in the Department of Education, Mr. Joel Larson, can pull it for the students that take the assessments online. The system is collecting the data on those scores, and he can sort through those scores based on question, based on standard, based on requirement. The challenge there is in order to collect that data, every student has to be in front of a computer that has internet access, and that can be challenging at times. But I don't have what that data looks like, but there is data being collected, and I also don't know, Madam Chair, the size of that sample at this stage.
Thank you, Mr. Miron. Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moran asked a question at the last hearing about of Dr. Stone, and so that's going to be related to my question here about what did career and technical education classes, how did that relate to the achievement gap? And I believe he said there really isn't any silver bullet, you know, and that case maybe couldn't be made. But I always think that, you know, when you have classes that come alive, that it impacts kids' motivation. And, you know, so I was kind of surprised that she didn't get a better answer out of him for that. And yesterday I had some students here from the School of Recording Arts. You know, that was another hands-on type experience that they were thriving in. Do either one of you know of any, maybe not for the achievement gap, but for graduation or staying in school, you know, kids that would not be thriving if they were doing the more straightforward curriculum but would thrive on this? Do you have any anything that would say this would keep some kids in school?
Mr. Miron, Mr. Schoenfeld, either.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I think even with Dr. Stone's demonstration, I'd have to pull out, I've got his slide thing here, but he did have a portion that did talk about the fact that students with career in tech, mm-hmm. and if you remember, there was a three lines of students that were maybe more like the underachievers and then the middle group and then the high achievers. And if you visualize in your mind, it was a graph that did show that those tied to career and tech education courses, and I think he talked about a 2-to-1 ratio of regular classes to career and tech. And as you had more career and tech in that mix, how the graduation numbers percentages did go up significantly. And he did show that in his demonstration. And I can find it for you later where the statistics came from.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that refreshes my memory on that.
Thank you.
I was so busy lamenting the answer about the achievement gap, I guess I missed that, so thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Miron, first of all, I appreciate your flexibility this week. I know that when you're saying you have your modified block schedule, twice this week we pulled you away from your work with your students, and that's very appreciated by this committee, and I don't want you to think that we aren't respectful and understanding of the sacrifice that you've made and your students to be here today. I also want to thank you for your commitment to agriculture. One of the things that I've learned over the years is that as we become more of an urbanized society, less emphasis is put on society as a whole, the roots of agriculture, and it's a huge, huge industry and part of the economic success of the state of Minnesota. I do remember some children in my neighborhood growing up when their parents were planting their very first garden, and these children are ages 5 and 6, and they said, "Mom and Dad, are we going to plant pizzas?"
Pizzas.
And so I think that just kind of tells you kind of the shift of where things are. The district that I represent has some very suburbanized areas as well as some very massive rural areas, and I'm happy to report that the school district that's more in the rural support area in the district has a very vibrant agricultural program. Their students are involved in the Future Farmers of America. I found this to be a very interesting trend when I was out visiting with the superintendent. He said that 5 out of the 10 people who are involved in that program as juniors and seniors, the 5 top are women or young ladies who are state recognized for their efforts and have received numerous awards. And he's very concerned that that will continue to just through attrition it go away. And very simply this, every morning when we get up, we trust that the federal food inspectors and the state food inspectors, when we pour that milk on those Cheerios in the morning, meet the health standards and that they're not compromised. And the agricultural industry has an awful lot, along with the inspectors, to ensure that we have a safe and viable food source in Minnesota. So hats off to you, sir, and I appreciate your work and efforts.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I appreciate that. And I was born and raised on a farm, but my farm is in Hugo, Minnesota, and just south of Forest Lake. And I've seen the growth that has happened just in my local community. And as a producer and now as an educator and as a citizen, I see that concept that you're explaining. That's why one of the activities that my students are working on while I'm away today is they're doing something called agriculture in the classroom. And they're developing lessons to bring down to elementary age students to help explain and understand some of these concepts in agricultural sciences. That's where we get to some of the application piece that I was talking about. If they can teach it, they likely understand it, and they can help influence others as well and pay that knowledge forward that they've achieved. And as far as the FFA is concerned, I agree with you. It's a dynamic organization. And fortunately, on the first, I had planned before I was asked to come and testify here, I had planned a trip with some of our FFA leaders to come to the Capitol and meet with their legislators already. And so that worked out fairly well. They were here. They were able to see this process at work. But in order to be an FFA and to be engaged in that leadership opportunity, a student has to be in at least one credit-bearing agriculture course during the year. And that's a national rule. So certainly we look to expand the scope of FFA and the leadership opportunities that provides. And coinciding with that is to expand the opportunities that students have to take agriculture courses, because that's where we draw our membership from.
So, Mr. Schoenfeld.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to add one thing, just a little point of clarification. FFA is no longer Future Farmers
right,
of America.
Right, we know
it
that.
Is now FFA.
I think we know that, yes.
And the reason for it is because it has transformed from preparing people in terms of farmers or producers to where most of our students, as indicated in Forest Lake, are not even from the farm, but they are gaining skills and appreciations for agriculture, and it's preparing them for things like agribusiness and biotechnology and many other things. So just a little point of clarification. We all grew up with Future Farmers of America, but no longer is it called Future Farmers, it's now just FFA.
And Mr. Muron, would you just share with us some of the competitive categories in which your students compete? Because I know FFA has a fantastic competition that I have found to be just the best for our students.
Certainly, Madam Chair. I actually have students competing in those areas today. And so I have some students that are in Foley, Minnesota today working in the area of fish and wildlife management. Not only do they have to identify different species of fish and wildlife, but they also have to go through a management problem that we've worked cooperatively with the Department of Natural Resources to help put together to give students a real-life application that happens there. We also have students participating in the Meat Science Career Development event today, everything from inspecting food quality to grading food quality to knowing what stamp and rating that product is going to get at the grocery store. That's the two that they're participating in today, but certainly there are many others ranging from public speaking to small animal production. There's about 42 opportunities for students to compete in, we call them career development events, because that's what they're designed to do. They're designed to promote career skills.
Excellent. And how many students do you have competing from Forest Lake altogether in the various categories?
Our chapter is about 110 members strong.
Excellent. Very good. Representative Driscoll had a follow-up. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Muron, you were talking about the modified block schedule, 3 50-minute periods and then 2 90-minute periods. Could you just maybe give an overview of some of the kinds of courses that you have that fit into the 50-minute block and the 90-minute block? And
Mr. Muron.
Certainly, Madam Chair. I try to maintain flexibility in what I teach where. I don't want a certain class to be locked into a certain time frame because I want to ensure that I provide some flexibility so students have the opportunity to take those courses. An example would be my fish and wildlife course that I teach. I have an example where earlier this year I taught it on a semester basis, and later on, fourth quarter, I'll be teaching it on a 90-minute basis. And so I have to be able to adapt those courses to meet the time constraints regardless. I've also been in some situations this year where I've taught the same course on a 50-minute prep period and also on a 90, and that makes the brain work a little bit harder there when you're trying to keep both groups straight. But we offer in Forest Lake a variety of courses in plant sciences. We have a working greenhouse in Forest Lake, so we can conduct growing exercises, laboratory experiences in a greenhouse setting. We also have a landscaping course, so we can apply some of those same plant science knowledge into the outdoor world. And it's not only just about maintaining, but it's about plant species, plant varieties. How do we get certain species that are certain colors? How do those things happen? There's also, we do a floral design course in the floral industry. Many folks took advantage of that on Valentine's Day, and so we try to apply some learning as well in the classroom. We have animal sciences, companion animal sciences. We have a traditional animal science course, which deals more with products. I'm currently teaching an animal health course, which is about veterinary medicine, more or less animal care and medical procedures. And then we have another set of courses in natural resource sciences. There's an environmental management course. There's a natural resources course where we explore forestry, soils, those types of topics. And then, of course, the courses that Mr. Schoenfeld mentioned were aligned with the University of Minnesota with two courses, one in plant science, one in animal science. We get certified. We use the content that they teach at the university and the labs that they use at the university, and our students receive 4 credits. For either of those courses. So if a student just takes those 2 courses through us, they have 8 credits at the University of Minnesota before they graduate from high school.
Well, Mr. Miron, it the best is to have the real teachers in our community, and we don't often have that opportunity. So I want to thank you very much for your presentation, for your commitment to your students and to our educational system, and ask you to come back anytime to give us a follow-up if that is required, and Mr. Schoenfeld too, for bringing this to us. This is a unique experience in this committee, but it's probably an invaluable one. So thank you very much. Members, are there any other questions for this outstanding young teacher here in Minnesota? Yes, Mr. Benson, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Miron, I'd like to thank you for coming too. I have a question not so much about your presentation, but about you and your motivation. How is it you got into education? That's one question. Second one is, why do you stay? And third, how could the job of teaching improve in a way that would encourage you to continue in the profession?
Mr. Miron.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's a loaded question there, but I
Madam Chair is meant to be.
I got into the profession of teaching because I had a teacher who encouraged me to do it, and it's interesting because I have the opportunity to work with that man every day. He's my coworker. He has a desk next to me. I've had the rare opportunity to be able to return to Forest Lake, where I grew up. I was hired as a long-term substitute there, and I've never left. So I was there for a teacher who went on maternity leave, and she since resigned her position, and they asked me to stay. And so I tell my students that I'm there by accident, and I never left. But I got into that because I had wonderful, fantastic teachers in Forest Lake to model after, and I think I stay in it because of the 8 young people and the many others that I have. The 8 young people that were here on Tuesday and the many others that I have back at home, being able to watch them achieve and grow and learn in a whole host of ways is certainly a great reward. and I enjoy doing it. That's not to say they don't keep me on my toes. They do challenge me each and every day. I think that's part of the fun a little bit too, is when you have students that challenge you, because they want what's best for them as well, and so do their parents. And that's the expectation that they come into every day, and that requires me to work hard to make sure that I meet those obligations that I've been entrusted with. And what could make it easier? I think just providing the resources necessary. MyCart is a great example, but providing resources that can help us be successful in the classroom and help us reach and touch as many students as we're able. And it's an enjoyable job, and I enjoy going to work every day. So thank you for the question.
And thank you again, Mr. Miron. And just an announcement, GOP members, remember, we're going to meet following adjournment in 454. Do other members have meetings they want to announce, Representative Greiling? No?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Or Representative Mariani? Because this is a shortened meeting today. Members, I do want to forewarn you that next week we're going to meet Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday evenings, and probably Friday. We have a very early deadline of bills to get to K-12 finance or to education finance, so please check your schedules to make sure that you will be available for those hearings. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, if I might make a rare appeal. Yesterday we visited, I think we had a terrific day visiting some phenomenal teachers in schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul, including some charter schools, and of course, after we did the major overhaul of our authorizers statutes a couple years ago, unfortunately, the department has found itself in a position where it's a little delayed in being able to, get new authorizers online. It's created a lot of anxiety.
Yes.
And tense.
Yes.
I see you're nodding your head. You know, with our charter schools.
Yes.
And I do know that there's a bill out there.
Yes.
And so I'm hoping that in this rush to get through those bills, that's one of the bills that will be addressed.
Yes. Representative Mariani, I assure you it is. Representative Calby Woodard is working on it, and he's had quite the feat to bring together all the players. I think he has a fine amendment ready to add to House File. I believe it's 134. I don't know.
I'm
looking at Ms. Larson. She probably thinks she's getting a bill ready, but I think it'll be an amendment so that we can move that quickly. And that should be on the docket next week.
Very well.
I mean, it has to be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you clarify what you mean by evening? Are we talking 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock? I mean,
members, I believe it's going to be a 6 o'clock start each of those evenings. And in this room, I believe, no? And we have till midnight each of those evenings. Hopefully we will not need all that time, but we do have a crunch in front of us, and it has taken some time to get everything together. So if there's no other business to come before this committee, it stands adjourned.